Well, I thought he said that he would. I thought he said he would be here, or he might be here, and that I thought Roger would be on his question. So, well,
we have not much of a
right.
Kind of taking my projector with Bill.
Yeah, the projector was going to be a big part of this. Bill, do you have anything that you could offer us in relationship to it?
You asked me. Yeah.
So if you just had a computer, we could have a smaller screen.
Yeah, if anybody had a laptop, do you think anybody's still in the building that would let us use a laptop? Probably not after 5:30, huh?
Well, what is it? It's just, we would look at those addresses, which are pretty much like, are they in alphabetical order by street and by the township?
Can put them in whatever order. Basically, I made a PowerPoint, so I could just put the PowerPoint up on the website and we could look at it, but it needs some explanation, really.
I think it would be better.
There's about 20 slides with some maps, and some, it would need a little bit of explanation, probably.
Are you seeing anything at this point?
Yeah. It's interesting to look at the... it's definitely old data. The census data is old, and it's hard to use as it is because there's been so much growth around the edge of the cities, in the past 10 years. But you can see that in the data, too, where it looks like looks like 10% of people out on the edge of town get called for summonses, but really the population has really grown so much that, it's really more like 2 or 3%.
How about we call this to order and get it rolling?
Okay.
So it is July 24th, Friday, July 24th, 2009, about 5:40 p.m. We are at the Brookings Administrative Center in the Jennifer K. Putman Meeting Room, 1776 East Washington, Urbana. And we're calling this meeting of the Jury Advisory Committee to order. We do a roll call starting with Ms. Putman.
Okay. Should I just call the name?
Sure, that would be fine.
And they're in alphabetical order. Aaron Ammons.
Here.
Tricia Avery.
Present.
Bill Brown.
Here.
Lorraine Cowart. Brian Dolinar. Barbara Kessel.
Here.
Joan Miller.
Here.
Jennifer Putman is here. Patrick Thompson. And Ken Turner.
Here.
And not present but excused are Pius Weibel and Roger Holland. And we haven't heard from Judge Stefanis. And Matt Gladney is here but momentarily away.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Brian Dolinar is out of town.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So we have, if we can have a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Ms. Turner, second by Ms. Avery. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Ayes have it. And if we can have a moment, did everyone get a chance to read the minutes?
No.
No? But we can take a minute for everyone to read the minutes.
Are you kidding? It's Friday. Yeah. Yeah, try.
It came obvious. They have a computer at the reception desk. We could probably go crowded on that one.
So much about how to put some minutes together. professionally.
What a compliment.
I have to say, though, that not every minute taker is as thorough as Jennifer. She does very good minutes. Most secretaries abbreviate the minutes, and you have to fill in the blanks. She's very thorough.
You need to be
sure
enough
that there are minutes, Jen.
And she doesn't make the mistakes that other minute takers do.
She's very thorough.
Very accurate.
Very good.
Is everyone comfortable with the minutes?
I read them before, so I just
okay. So we have, if we can have a motion to approve the minutes from July 10, 2009.
I move.
We have a move by Ms. Barbara Kessel. Have a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Joan Miller. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Ayes have it. Consensus? Unanimous, excuse me. So, we have public participation. We have a letter that was written by a young man who recently was served, not on a jury, but was actually called to
summons.
He was a summons. And I was hoping Carol would come back to give some minutes about her experience this week. She did jury service this week, and she had some comments. Yes, sir.
Was her experience most positive, most negative? What kind of Carol?
Kind of in the middle. It's interesting how those who have been seen in the community as activists to some degree, what I went through and served, it was pretty obvious that I got in the box and was actually questioned by prosecutors, and they immediately dismissed me. I guess it kind of comes with the territory. So I don't think she ever thought she was going to actually serve on a jury, but she never even made it into the box. And to some degree, she expressed to me that she felt like, the civic duty is wonderful because it's something that she enjoys. But she felt overall like there wasn't enough conscious effort to really appreciate the time of the jurors. As you know, you come and you sit for a couple of hours and they just come and say, okay, we don't need you, see you later, here's $10. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, okay, I know we're not getting paid a whole bunch for this, and her job actually covers it, but she felt like the time, it wasn't the best use of the juror's time. So she thought maybe there could be some things done around that, but we'd have to really get a better understanding of. She said, for instance, why would 50 people need to go into one courtroom if you only get four challenges apiece? So you can only move 8 people. So if you need 12 and 2 alternates. So if you got 14 plus 8, that's that 22, right? So that should be the maximum, maybe 30 people.
Well, there are other reasons. Like somebody could just come forward and they say, oh, you were the victim of such and such crime, go away.
The
people can dismiss themselves. They can say, I would be prejudiced, or the judge can dismiss them.
Right, so they're more than the preemptive challenge.
So what she was getting at is that, okay, so you have some of that, and there was a lady, she said, who did that. But do you need 50 or 60 people to sit there just in case this type of thing happens? You know, I don't know, but that's something we should investigate. I'm sure the system has looked into, or the people who've been running the system for years have looked into that, and maybe they thought that was a safe number. Mm-hmm. But it was just like so many people. You know, the first four people, they moved to, and then they put 2 in their place and kept those 4. And then the next 4 people, they moved 2 and then kept those 4. So that was 8. 4 people were removed, and then you had 8 people already. Then the next 4, they kept all of them. So you had all these other people just kind of sitting there, you know, just hoping to get called, and nobody gets called, then they get dismissed. So for Carol, you know, she likes to be doing something with her time all the time. So for her, it's like, if you don't use me, you're wasting my time. So there's some of that has to be balanced. She has to understand that there has to be, these are precautions that are put in place by the system. But at the same time, could there be some tweaking of it that would maybe break those numbers down some? I don't know. It was just something that she and I talked about. And then the main thing for her was that as much as this is considered a civic duty, the reality is that if you're poor, you're not going to be in there. She said, there's a couple of black people sprinkled here, like maybe 5 out of 60 or 70 that were there. But the bottom line was that based upon her observations and conversations that she had, people who couldn't afford to be here weren't going to be there. So as much as we say this is a system of civic duty, this is still, it boils down to seem to be about class and about economics when it's all said and done. Because I talked to lots of people, Sean at the barbershop. He said, if I get called and you ask me to give up, you know, a Friday, where I'm going to make $250 today, and you want me to come and sit all day in the jury for 10, and I can't do that. You know what I mean? That's because he doesn't have anything built in place to keep his salary going. Like when I served for the university, they pay for you for jury service. So I still receive my same salary. But could I give up $115 a night for 5 nights to make $50 if they weren't paying it? As much as I want to serve, do I create that kind of hardship for my family? I can't afford to do that, you know. Joan would probably cover it for me, though, I'm sure. But well, those are some of the things that she observed that she wanted to share herself. But since you asked, I thought I'd just put it out there. Yes, ma'am.
Well, I would like Carol to, if not the very next meeting, a meeting in the near future, to come and speak more about this. It's good to hear your take on what she said. I think it would be better to talk with her. But I want to understand something better. When Carol spoke 2 weeks ago, I had the understanding that she had received the questionnaire.
No, she had actual summons. She had already done the questionnaire.
Okay.
She had actual summons to be there.
And only 60 people are in the room?
She said there was over 100.
Over 100.
In the big room. But when they broke up to go to different courtrooms, it may have been 50 or 60 people in a particular courtroom.
And her name was never, that's that random drawing where they choose.
Right.
Her name, it just so happened that her name never was chosen.
To go actually be questioned by. Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. She was never chosen.
That was my experience when I went there. I found that part fascinating. To sit in the courtroom and watch that occur.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think that part is good. If you're going to take these jurors who sat there and didn't have any actual input or part of the system, to actually let them walk away with something that says this is how you were educated, or these are the things that you observed, so that you really understand what was happening here. Because maybe some people may be sitting there like, peremptory challenge, what is that? I have no idea what that is. Why did she get moved off? What does that mean in the whole frame of things, in the whole context of things, you know? So.
Well, I had a similar situation when I was called, the one time I was called, to serve as a potential juror.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tom Burns and I had the same experience at the time. He's the state rep, and I was an elected official as well. They had us come. I think I came for 3 days, and each time they excused me. And, I mean, we did sit around, and we went to the jury box, and obviously they weren't going to select us to serve. But why make us go through that? I mean, if you obviously know that you're not going to be selected.
Some lawyer might decide that they want you for a case or something. It's just, it's hard to tell ahead of time.
Well, the two voir dires that I sat through this year, where you're just watching the jury be selected, the vast majority of people sitting there all day were not called up. So it's like you say, why do they have so much surplus? Not even half the people were called up that were sitting there.
Yeah.
And those of us in the audience had to move to the back because they took up all the room. Mm-hmm. And there was at least 60 people.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems like it isn't just a waste of time. It's very discouraging. People don't want to go through that twice.
Jenny and Dan.
Yeah, I'm thinking there are probably answers to all of these that Judge DeFantis or Roger Holland or even maybe Steve Peckett could answer, except that they aren't here. But these are important questions, and I there are probably answers for them that we won't have.
Right.
But The fact that, it, as Barbara said, it's discouraging for people, or that vocabulary is being used that mystify folks, what do you think about having a little glossary to give out so that for jurors to, this is what a peremptory challenge is, this is what we mean, this by voir dire. But this, when you first called on me, I wanted to ask, did Carol have anything to say about the video, the orientation video with Judge Ladd?
Well, she said they listened to it. They couldn't actually watch it. It wasn't, for some reason, and this goes back and forth. When I went in, we couldn't watch it either. We just listened to it. So that was the first time I saw it, when we saw the actual video here. So it seems to kind of go back and forth based upon whether or not, because of the work that's being done on the clock tower, that was the reason that we were given why we couldn't actually watch it, the video.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if I know we have terrible problems with this hideous $10 a day so-called pay, but if on top of that people are not being properly thanked with a heartfelt, well-expressed message from a person of authority, a judge, not the videotape that I thought that we saw was pretty good, but for a person to in robes to be there in person to sincerely express the appreciation of the court system, and going, well, there's still some county board members here, for the people of Champaign County. I mean, it's a shame if it, I got the feeling from Judge DeFonis and hearing him talk about bringing bagels and cream cheese for jurors some days, that I thought more hospitality was extended. And I have my own memory from a jury service that must go back almost 40 years, when Judge Jensen was the person who welcomed us and spoke in a sartorial demeanor, and he impressed upon us the high import of what we were about to engage in. And it got to me. It made me feel that it was very important. Mm-hmm. And I hope that we're going to have a lot of convincing to do, because in the end, we do want Sean to leave the barber shop and leave that $250 a day, to think that something's more important than the $250. Mm-hmm. But who am I, a middle-class person who doesn't have the family to feed, who am I to say that Sean hasn't made the decision that's right for him to make? Mm-hmm. But I think that is our challenge on this committee, is making people think that it's worth for, it's that important.
The sacrifice.
But the sacrifice is it's a vast, terrible sacrifice. Not terrible sacrifice. It's a huge sacrifice for some to make, and for others it might be a minor inconvenience, or, oh, this will even be interesting. Mm-hmm. But recognizing that it is a huge sacrifice, if we want people to make it, that's our job with whatever kind of public education campaign we can be doing.
No, I like the perspective that you're offering to not place the value of this experience monetarily, but more upon what your education is, what you get to learn about the system that governs you, or that you're supposed to actually be running. So I understand that perspective, and if we focus, I think, our ads or whatever around that, as well as the reality of economic hardships, I think there would be we would reach people, and we would, as a friend says, scratch them where they itch, and they might itch in a couple of places. So, you know, we can get that accomplished. I see what you're saying. I like that perspective as well. Because I enjoy learning. I feel better when I know what's happening with this term, voir dire. You know, like, okay, I can't even spell that. What are you talking about? Like, you know, you're speaking French. Why do you even have to call it a voir dire? Why don't you just say I'm questioning jurors, you know? But I see what you're saying. I like the glossary idea of the terms. Because people, if you understand the definitions, then you can follow what's happening. So this young man who served, who wrote up his stuff, some we will find in here. Oh, I'm sorry, Joan.
That's okay. Go ahead.
No, I want you to go. You have something to add?
I just want. I guess I see it differently because I've been in the courtroom and they only called in 35 people. In fact, usually I thought they called 35, and I've seen them sometimes get close to running out of people. And then they'll call them back to the courthouse. And I also watched the jury orientation one time when Judge Ford did it in person. It wasn't a video. And it's so much more, well, welcoming if you have somebody actually there and actually thanking the people for coming. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what I see is not that it's not black people aren't participating. It's the low-income people. Mm-hmm. I watched a trial of Judge DeFantis recently, and 12 jurors and two were black men. And, I mean, it was obvious by the way they're dressed. They're middle-class people. Mm-hmm. But poor people can't afford to participate, and I don't think they feel comfortable participating, and I think that's what we've got to work on.
I mean, yes.
And I can almost say with a lot of certainty that many of the defendants in our courtrooms are
poor.
Mm-hmm. Are poor people. Mm-hmm. So truly representative of a jury of their peers is really not mm-hmm. accurate because, and we can question that. I know we talked about what does that mean, but, you know, there is that.
That just hit me a couple of days ago, and I was like, yeah, I'm so focused on the money and how much you get to serve, but never really dawned on it. Just the other day, the exact thing you just said about, wow, so you have a jury of people who really, though they may look like you, their experiences are probably very different, than yours, mm-hmm. and their circumstance, and you're actually asking a group of people to take some notes, maybe, and go back and actually just listen to the evidence and remove any of their own personal bias. Come on now. You know what I mean?
Understand any of your experiences.
Right.
And in some of which you think, how does one get to where they are? And now they came before a judge and under circumstances. But there is a cause for seeking justice, and I really think that the value has to be placed on the fact that it is a responsibility to make sure that justice is served. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it is easy to say for some, you know, I do my civic duty. I give it up. But it is a hardship for some people. Mm-hmm. So we just have to figure out a way in which, you know, we had talked about working with, the chambers to try to work with some employers who, if it's going to be a civic duty, then just like being called to serve your country, you know, your job is protected. You may not get paid, but it's protected. I think that there needs to be the employers who employ people need to, I think, it should be a benefit that if you are called mm-hmm. in your way, your job is protected and you get paid for those days. It's mm-hmm. like a natural benefit that comes in any job in America. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a larger thing, but I think that that's something we have to work on.
Mm-hmm. I just kind of want to go back to the peer situation. I had to fight a speeding ticket in Iroquois County in Wansika. So I hired a lawyer from Kankakee and a Caucasian lady, you know, had my suit on and everything. And as soon as we hit that door at the courthouse, I said, I'm done.
You're not going to win.
And I don't mean that in a bad way, okay? But I just knew that when I walked in the door and I looked around at everybody, and I'm just like, none of my peers here. Mm-hmm. But then again, my peers would be like baseball players and athletes and things like that. The most people that I hang out with are golfers. Mm-hmm. But definitely, that's definitely a big problem. Mm-hmm. For a young man like me at the time, I was fairly young, going into Wasika. Man, you realize how intimidated I was walking mm-hmm. in there? Yeah. I was so scared, I couldn't hardly walk. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm driving to Wasika, and I'm looking all around and everything. I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified to go in there. But then I was, just paid $350 or whatever. Yeah, $350. Mm-hmm. And
plus your attorney.
Plus attorney. Mm-hmm. Yep. So
cut your losses.
Very intimidating. At that time, it was for him. But still, I mean, I wouldn't enjoy going to Iroquois County today. So, jury of our peers.
It's funny, that goes back and forth, because some historical data shows and statements on record show that your peers are supposed to be those who actually know you. This was supposed to have been the impetus from the very beginning that that if Patricia Avery was on trial, that this is what the jury would look like. People who know her, who can actually judge her character and say, well, this was out of character. No, she doesn't deserve to do 50 years for this. Maybe she has to do something, some sort of rehabilitation, but we know her. You know, so it wasn't based upon status and all that kind of different stuff. So to have strangers actually walk into a room and all they know about you is this, whoever can paint the best picture of you, whether it's defending or the prosecutor, that's not a real honest assessment of who this individual is. And so that was one of the things that historically peers were supposed to have been the community, people who knew you, you know, but somehow that changed also, so I don't know.
Well, they were when Abraham Lincoln was a circuit court public defender, I guess.
I was going to say, going off what Tricia was saying, when the Justice Committee was, this is before we formed this committee here, when Justice was talking about this issue, I actually mentioned in one of the meetings that I thought it would, you know, we seem to put all the burden on, you know, the lone citizen, you know, like, you know, trying to make them understand that this is a civic duty and that they better show up, and that they don't, you know, it's not cool.
Do bad, hurt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we understand about your, you know, kind of job you have or hardship, but, you know, this is important. You know, it's all on you. And I said, you know, if we all feel it's so important, you know, and I do for one, you know, why doesn't this get made? You know, why don't we let something bigger shoulder it, like a business? First, I got kind of shouted down because people said, well, we can't do that at the county level. That has to be like a state thing, which, okay, I understand that, you know. But I said, still, to me, that seems like something that, you know, should be considered. And I found it interesting. The reaction I got from at least certain members of the committee was, you know, kind of like something you hear a lot, kind of business is sacred, you know, and you don't put extra burdens on business. And, you know, like, and people, of course, mention, like, small businesses. You know, and I'm not saying necessarily none of this is not true. You know, but like I said, small businesses, you know, that already are trying to scrape by and make ends meet, you know, they can't afford to, like, pay someone who's not there one day for jury duty and then pay somebody there to replace them, which, you know, has merit. But, you know, we are putting, though, you know, the burden has to fall somewhere. And right now, for, you know, the status quo is that it falls on just the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're seeing what happens when that's the case. So,
well, that's certainly not fair. And I just put down, the employers are enjoying the promise of America but refusing to pay employees to do jury service, which is civic duty. That's kind of, I guess, hypocritical would be a strong word to use, I think. But why wouldn't Walmart pay for jury service? I mean, you know what I'm saying? So there's some things from a legislative standpoint, or
instead of making $5 billion a year, they may only be able to make 4.9.
You know, so I think that we can, you know, those are some of the things that we can introduce. We want to read this for public participation, y'all, for Neil's piece.
So we'll take a minute to read it, right?
Well, I thought Barbara would read it aloud.
Oh,
okay, good.
I'll read all but the last two paragraphs because he kind of repeats himself there. This was an experience of my neighbor and a guy that both Aaron and I happen to know, who is a high school, he's a grade school teacher in Rantoul, and he's on his summer break. So he was real eager to be, he got a jury summons, he was real eager to serve. And then he had this terrible experience, and he was telling us about it, he was telling everybody about it in all directions, which, of course, is what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, please write this.
Right.
Please write this up, and I'll bring it to me. I don't know if we can do anything about it, but this is another experience. I received a jury summons for July 13th. That's this year. My summons stated I needed to be at courtroom H at 12:30 p.m. The summons also came with a yellow parking pass, good until 12 p.m. on July 13th. Upon reviewing all the documents, it was quite confusing. Why would I be provided with a parking pass valid until noon when I would not need to be present, according to the summons, until 12:30? The summons stated I needed to park on one of the parking lots designated with the enclosed map on the parking pass. With the parking pass expiring at noon, I would have had to risk being ticketed, my car being towed, or having to pay for a parking space. All of these are counterproductive to civic service. In this situation, where should a juror park? Due to this confusion, I called the jury personnel number and only received an automated response. After going through the Touchstone menu, it clearly stated that all recipients of a summons should appear at the court at 9 a.m. When I appeared on July 13th before 9 a.m., I asked the information desk where I needed to go and showed them the summons. They directed me to the jury assembly area where others had begun congregating. The jury assembly staff arrived late. What would happen to we jurors if we were to arrive late? He is irritated. And began checking us in. I showed them my summons, and they directed me to the room for jury assembly where I was until 10:30 or so. The next day, I arrived at 9 o'clock again and was dismissed after about 10 minutes. I found out I was in the wrong place on the afternoon of the second day when I received a phone call about 1-ish in the afternoon telling me it was my fault that I was not there at 12:30 and that I would not be paid for either day that I had checked in, as it was my error.
Can I interrupt real quick? When I read this earlier, I had a question about that. So what can you... I don't quite understand what he's talking about there. Could you explain that?
Okay. Yeah, it is confusing. He got the summons said that he was supposed to be there at 12:30.
On the first day.
On the first day. Mm-hmm. And the parking pass was 9 to noon. Mm-hmm. So he called up to see which time he was supposed to go. Yeah. And he got this automated thing that said all jurors are supposed to come at 9. Mm-hmm. So he did that. And he showed his summons to a bunch of different people, and nobody said, hey, you're in the wrong place, wrong time. Mm-hmm. They just acted like he's in the right place, so he assumed that he was. Mm-hmm. And then he got sent home every day before noon, so he didn't have to confront the parking pass problem, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so he thought he would be going again the third day, until he got a call the afternoon of the second day saying, you're a bad boy because you did not come at 12:30, on Monday or Tuesday, and so now you are out. You cannot come. You cannot be on a jury, and we are not going to pay you because it's your fault. Mm. And then he goes on to say, somehow there was no fault applied to a summons and a parking pass whose times were incongruent. There was no fault applied to the if you have questions phone number message telling all prospective jurors to appear by 9 a.m. There was no fault applied to the information desk staff who, when I asked for assistance, directed me to the jury assembly room. There was no fault applied to the jury assembly room staff that they were given my summons and did not state that there were any errors or problems. Somehow, it was my entire fault, as if I did not read directions. I even received a letter, and I have a copy of that too, basically telling me that I did not read the directions. I was highly offended. And I'll stop there, because the rest is just...
But that goes back to what you said, it is all... on you, right? And Carol shared with me that Wednesday night, she was looking for her little pamphlet, which has the codophone to call in. And so she had to look for it, and she couldn't find it out in the car. Well, that's probably because she sent Jelani to find it. She should have sent it for herself. But they didn't find it the next morning, so she had to call, and she was calling Shirley, the lady who was there. And so she ended up finally getting through, and she made it there on time. But what Shirley told her when she got there, Shirley confessed that she had actually had the wrong times on the automated thing anyway. So there are errors that take place that are the responsibility of those who are put in charge. And I guess what he's saying is, you know, all the onus is on me. Where's the responsibility from the other parties? So we just wanted to actually share this. Yes, ma'am.
I am so glad that this individual knew that there were some other people who care about this and knew of the existence of the Citizens Committee. Mm-hmm. If Judge Stepanis were here, I am quite sure that he would make sure that Mr. Parthen mm-hmm. is contacted and is made whole. The $10 or $20 or $30 that this county might benefit by not paying to this individual, that is worth nothing compared to the ill will, mm-hmm. the resentment, mm-hmm. which gets multiplied when Neil tells other people.
Right. Exactly.
And this makes me ask, I mean, I'm glad that the letter is in good form and it's now in our possession. But maybe Neil didn't see that there's supposed to be a question or a suggestion box. I mean, maybe he didn't know. So he didn't even get to be oriented, to be welcomed. And people make mistakes. Shirley Marshall made a mistake or somebody at the, I shouldn't say her name, but mm-hmm. so people make mistakes. But if Judge Stepanis will be very unhappy to know about it. He will be glad that Neil Parthen took the time to write and that we've discussed it, but he'll be very unhappy to know about this. This is like a tidal wave of ill will. that will be multiplied. I usually bring my whole file of stuff, and there's a letter to the editor. It might be a whole year old that I know Judge Chaponis is delighted to have, because it's from a juror who said, "My experience was wonderful. I was greeted by well-informed personnel who impressed upon me the importance of what we were about to embark on." And, you know, that was a case where everything went right, and this juror went away feeling well satisfied, and even wrote a letter to the editor about it. Judge DePonis will be so glad that this does not, maybe if he can be made whole, maybe Neil then can write a letter to the editor about how when people who are in position to act on this acted on it and it was corrected. But I think... Well,
you know, the money was not really the issue.
But still, what an insult.
But he wanted to serve.
Right,
He never got even a chance to get into the jury room.
Right.
And then when he did get a response, it was like, well,
it's
all
your
fault.
Yeah.
You can't redirect.
Barbara, and it was given to you, right? This is...
Yeah, but he understood that it was going to
okay.
be...
Well, can we...
I asked him to write it up. He was going around talking all the time, you know, and it is confusing. The more he talked, the more I thought, what really happened?
Right.
So I said, write it up, and then...
I know that we're still in public participation, but when we get into business, I'm going to move that we send this to, it should probably go to the court administrator, Holland, but because he's not available right now, then to Judge DePonis, and that we should ask Judge DePonis to be in touch with Mr. Parthen to understand in a one-on-one conversation more of what happened and find out how these mistakes could have occurred and how they can be corrected in the future.
Well, I've spoken before, so you can go ahead. Well, I was just wondering, since he didn't really... get a chance to serve if it's not too late, that he could get a deferral. I know that pretty often they get deferrals mm-hmm. for certain, so that he
would be better.
I think he'd like that.
More than the $20.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wish I was honest here, because I guess the thing that I'm confused about is based upon what he's describing in this, here's the thing, I've been given to understand based upon my experience in jury service and then, you know, what I've learned from the courts, is that they always, your jury service, whether you're just sitting in a room or doing whatever, always starts at like 9 a.m.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, when I'm reading this, what I'm gathering from them is that what the court system seems to be confronting is that no, sometimes it begins at 12:30.
I guess.
He was mistaken for, which I wish Judge DePonis was here so we could verify that, because that seems odd.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a kind of jury, a grand jury or something? Yeah, I mean, and he's talking about the, I guess, corporate may just be the county, not the federal, whatever, but, so, and we are sure about that, right, is the county.
Did you see the letter that he got?
No, he said he could supply any of those things, so I'll ask you.
Here's the thing, yeah, well, I know Neil, too, so I was going to venture to, like, ask him for copies of the settlement.
Yeah, he says, I received a letter and have a copy of that, too.
Yeah,
so we can get the
but, like, I don't know how out of commission Roger Holland is at the moment, but like he would probably be the actual person to go to with this, but is he not doing anything right now?
I think, you know what, I'll just call DePonis or Holland. I sent some emails to Roger, and I didn't get an email back. I think maybe he's...
Yeah, well, we don't want to send this time.
But,
you
know,
hospital bed.
Okay.
You know?
But yeah, I do think that maybe getting the copies and then...
Okay.
So we just can come and say, here's everything that, you know... Because, you know, Neil's already had to, you know, it's a shame that he even had to write this. So I think, he's already had to do enough work. We could, like, do some of the legwork for him, get the copies from him,
mm-hmm.
and then ourselves do the, getting it to.
The right
I'd be willing to do that, or someone else, if you guys live next to him, you know, that's fine too. But, you know.
I do.
Okay.
I have to excuse myself, but before I go, I read in the minutes where Carol requested that we would report to Justice at some point in time. We've met a few times. We have had some discussion, a lot of good discussion, I think. Is there any plan? There was a lot that went on at that last meeting on the 10th.
Right.
Sorry, I missed it.
Yeah.
Maybe we might want to... pull together a report to the justice meeting?
Yeah, I was going to comment on that in another new business, but we'll do it now. There were no committee meetings this month, the June justice meeting. I did give a report out. I mean, it was very informal, but, talked about the progress of this committee and where we're at. Okay. And I did mention, you know, I do mention it frequently at county board meetings, and I did so last night, about where we're at with this committee and who we meet. And then Jenny gave me a good suggestion about, I'm going to start including, she's going to send me the minutes in email form for these meetings. I'm just going to include them in Justice Committee meetings, just to reports to place on file.
Okay.
But I was also, you know, going to what Tricia's suggesting here. I mean, would you, I'm not sure what your schedule is like. You know, Justices are the first Monday of the month. Are you available to come and make a, you know, a brief report?
When do you all meet?
7 p.m.
7 p.m.?
Yeah.
It depends. Sometimes I'm able to maneuver.
You're at work.
sometimes I'm off, just happen to be off or something like that. And I could possibly do something like that, but I have to really plan it. But I wouldn't mind if I had to, you know, type something up that was from my perspective and also offer it, and maybe you could read it or something like that.
It would be good. And if I, you know, that could even go into our agenda. Our agendas, you know, need to kind of, I would need to have it like the first part of the week before our meeting.
Okay.
So I can get it to the secretary.
Well, if we can stay in touch about when you guys, like when do you meet again? You said in August?
Yeah, it'll be August 3rd.
August 3rd?
Yeah.
Okay, I think I could just type something up before then, because I was going to propose that we meet probably August 14th. We met twice this month. I don't know if we need to meet twice again next month. I guess we could discuss that when we get down to the schedule.
And also, if you're unavailable, you can always contact me if you want to read your report.
Yeah, the county has the chair of our nursing home subcommittee come to report to the full board. So, I mean, that's something.
Right. Delegate responsibility.
There you go.
See you later. Oh, you know what?
This is regarding how we stay in touch with the Justice and Social Services Committee. Because I just know how county board, or any public official acts, rather than sending the minutes to members in electronic form, if they could be printed out and included in the bound agenda.
Well, that's what I meant.
Okay. Because people are more likely to read it if they see it in front of them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes our Justice Committee members are just told, go to the file that the public defender keeps if you want to know what the public defender's been doing. And a conscientious person.
If you send me the minutes electronically, what I'll do is then I'll send
okay.
them, I'll forward them to the Tiffany,
okay.
who does the justice agenda,
the
and
most,
then yeah,
okay.
and then those will be sent off to Tiffany, and then
okay.
I'll have her put those in the agenda.
Okay, and it is, and I am like taking care to write cogent minutes to express the ideas of what we're doing. In future, it might just be they talked about the same stuff they talked about the time before, but. Which is, that's pretty much what the Open Meetings Act just requires that. But I want us, you know, one of the things we talked about last time was any support that we might get from the county. And, you know, I doubt that we're going to get many dollars from the county board. But if we have good minutes and they can see the gist of the meaty stuff that we're talking about, that would make it more likely that there might be a small appropriation for us in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're going. Matt will make sure that these in up here in the bound agenda materials that all county board members receive, not just the nine who serve on the Justice Committee.
Well, it'll be in the Justice Committee.
Right.
Now all county board members get committed.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Thank God we've still got a Justice and Social Services Committee.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And this would make it even more viable, right, and more valued. So the public participation, we move on to discussing a proposed new language.
Are we going to talk again about how to act on Neil's letter under new business?
I thought that, well, if we want to just clarify that now, then we don't have to come back to that. That would be fine.
Weren't you offering to send this to Judge Stefanos?
Yeah, I can do that. What I would like to do first is get from Neil
the letter.
The letter. And the, well, the summons and then the letter.
Uh-huh.
And then, yeah.
I have his email address, but not with me. You need that.
I'm
You're, I'm on Facebook with Neil. We talk.
Okay,
so.
Great. Okay. So, all right, then you're out. You're on.
You will collect all of the documents that he offered to provide,
yes.
and I think that we'll want to get the street address, too. Right. And I know that Judge Stefanis will take this to heart.
I think we'd like to emphasize that we'd like to see a deferral and or a reimbursement.
Right.
The main reason I encouraged him to write it up was not to make him whole, but to alert us to
the kind of stuff
that may go on. I mean, this has happened to everybody in some governmental office in your life, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this kind of bureaucratic runaround.
But maybe people don't feel comfortable going to a guy in robes, but they don't mind going to their neighbor who serves on a citizens committee. And then you know what might be nice when we get this properly resolved? Maybe we could write a guest commentary or something in the paper, and that might be a way to kind of introduce ourselves to the public more about these are the kinds of testimonials and information that we receive, and giving all of our addresses. Pointing out where on the county's website we can be contacted, mm-hmm. so that people know that can be like an ombuds function that we can serve.
Mm-hmm. Would you be able to, I mean, if you can't make it this third, because it's sort of, would you be able to write some type of something, a report out,
okay.
and email it to me maybe by Monday?
Okay. By Monday?
Yeah.
But you will send a letter to Judge Stefanis in the courthouse saying that we discussed this here. And
well, you should investigate. Oh. For, yeah, you should look at.
Okay, here's the thing.
Okay.
I want to, before I go to Judge Stefanis or whomever, I want to see the summons that Neil got,
okay.
as well as the letter that he got.
Yeah.
I'm sure he didn't misunderstand
right.
something.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I you know, there's.
Yeah.
You know, before the term, you know, use the term flying off the handle, you know, before we do that,
right.
I just want to make sure, you know,
the
T's are crossed and the I's are dotted.
Right.
And I will get this, I could mail it to Judge Stefanis, yes. I'll probably send him an email, too, just give him a heads up, hey, I'm sending this to you.
Right.
Email your findings, or is it, I mean, are you just going to go ahead and send it to the judge? Without us seeing it first, not that we, you know, I'm just asking.
I can do either one now. If you want to wait until the August 14th meeting, we can do that. That will delay things. I don't know how much of a rush is on this anyway, but that way we all want is for me to come back to the committee on August 14th with this.
I would prefer that we delegate that responsibility to you. I think that. It's okay for you to send it to everybody. I don't necessarily think that we have to approve it, but I think you'd be open to suggestions
mm-hmm.
if there was something else in it.
Okay.
Yeah, like just something saying, oh, this is interesting that I saw blah, 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 that I noticed blah, blah, blah,
okay.
to kind of, you know, say, yeah. oh, that's what it is. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what is Monday? When is that? Today's the 24th. So Monday's the 27th?
Yes.
Yeah.
And while you're doing dates, probably the date when material would have to be at the county board office to be included in for the August 3rd Justice Committee meeting, that would probably be Wednesday, July 29th. It's coming right up.
So Jenny explains. That's why I want Aaron to get the report to me by Monday.
Oh, right. Okay.
And
okay.
I already have
okay.
the minutes from
right.
you.
Right. Okay. Okay.
So... It's all under control.
Okay. Matt chairs the committee.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Jim is so thorough. I appreciate it. I learned
okay.
so much from
okay.
you. That's for sure.
Okay.
That's for sure.
We're good.
So are we clear on that? We need to hash anything else out? Okay. So then moving on to number six, what we're supposed to discuss and propose new language for the questionnaire by Judge Stefanis. I wish Patricia was still here because I wanted her to hear this. But you two, were you here last?
No.
So you three, what we were talking about was on the summons, I mean, the questionnaire, let me make sure I'm clear, that there were two questions that were going to be removed completely from the questionnaire, if I'm correct.
You were going to combine them.
No, there were two that were going to be completely removed. Am I correct, Jenny? I'm sure
yes,
you got
the one asking about auto accidents and
See, I should have brought my whole file with me. Oh, maybe I do have it. Let me see.
Yeah,
I guess
Carol,
I do have,
I mean, Carol,
I do have it. I do have it. Here we go. Here we go.
Probation or parole could be deleted.
Okay, so what we have here is we were going to combine. Judge DeFantis proposed that he would combine question 10 and 11 to be just one question, and that there will be a delete of question 12. And there was another question, I thought. I thought there were two that were going to be deleted. No, just one. So we're going to delete 12 completely. Are you or a close family member on probation or parole? That one would be deleted completely from the questionnaire. Now, they may be asked that in the box if they actually get into the jury box, but it wouldn't be on this paper. And then 10 and 11. So that would take us down to 11 questions as opposed to 13, because one of the things that Barbara is saying is that, I mean, this thing is just, it's intimidating itself. You have all this stuff to read, and the most important three questions are these. These are the qualifying questions. 1, 2, and 3. Are you at least 18?
Right.
Are you a United States citizen? Are you a resident of Champaign County? Those are qualifying questions. So which ultimately means that all of this information is to support the lawyers and to cut down some of the time possibly in the courtroom. And what we're saying, and what I think what we've clarified here today is, why don't you just ask these questions to those who actually enter the box? When knowing that such a large percentage of people aren't even getting into the box. Okay, so why do we even need, so ultimately, we don't need any of these questions. They are all here for the benefit of the lawyers and the judge, in essence. So that's the proposal, that he would combine those two questions. I think there could be some more debate about that at a later time, but at this point we will.
You mean combine those two questions for the later date when they fill out all the rest of it?
What do you mean? No, this questionnaire, if we combine, if he gave us language that we agreed upon for 10 and 11 and it became one question, it would be enacted and put on the questionnaires that are going out as soon as we possibly can. So this would still be on the questionnaire, though, when people received it in the mail.
But the questionnaire is everybody.
Yes, everybody who qualifies with either the driver's license, a state ID, or registered voter. Yes.
That's the master list. The questionnaire doesn't go to everybody on the master list.
Right.
Because maybe 10% of the people on the master list. Well, yeah, about 10%.
Okay, the master list.
Yeah, master list. What's that?
The master list is all the addresses they have of the driver's license and
the
voter's registration. That's basically everybody in the county that they can get addresses.
And only 10% of those people receive questionnaires?
That's why
that?
Most of us have never gotten questionnaires.
Okay, yeah, so we're going to have to start
and
this.
And then the questionnaire.
See, I thought everybody.
But some of them don't.
So you're saying that randomly 10%.
Yeah, I think
everybody got a questionnaire.
No?
I've
10% a year?
I've been asked to. I've been summoned several times. I have never seen that. But I've been down to the courthouse several times.
This was only instituted maybe, well, it was instituted since your last service.
When was the last time you served?
I never served. I was asked to.
When,
never served.
When was the last time you got the questionnaire or got the summons?
I would say maybe 04.
Maybe. Well, then this had to be implemented after 2004.
And why did you serve?
I was a grant writer. The last one was I was a grant writer. It was a grant due to Department of Human Services. I had to get it done. Mm-hmm. So that was the last one.
Well, my proposal, anyway, was that the questionnaire only ask what we have to know in order to qualify them to begin.
That's
three questions on the front. Yeah. And all the rest of that stuff be put on a separate piece of paper to meet them when they come. And for their summons, and also don't get dismissed. And then they go sit
okay,
in the big
see,
room,
I didn't understand.
And they
that
have to be oriented, and they have plenty of time while they're sitting there
right.
to fill that out and turn it in so the judge has it and the lawyers have it by the time they get to that park.
So you don't
park.
Want, right,
that
okay.
way, everybody be happy.
Right, you don't want to take away the information. You're saying, send me this summons on a nice, colorful sheet of paper, right, with something inviting, with three questions on it.
That's all.
And the exemptions. You have to have exemptions.
That page.
Just
that
this page.
Other
and all this other
page.
Stuff, when you get there, you can get that and sit down and fill it out. So now you're using two sheets of paper instead of one.
But you have a lot less people filling out this because you don't have everybody that answered the first one or didn't answer the first one. Mm-hmm.
Well, certainly you would increase your numbers because some people will turn this over and be like, okay,
yeah.
I'll read this little part
that's
here and I'll fill this out. You want me to fill out all this? You know.
Well, the other problem we were worried about is that some people might look at the other side and say, oh, well, I have to give a no to that so they wouldn't want me.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore they don't fill it out. When that isn't even the truth
right.
of the matter.
But if they're sitting in the court, in the assembly room, and they read this and they've already talked to someone who comes in, whether it's an audio piece or someone in an actual black robe or whatever comes in and explains this
why
stuff
they
to
need
you,
to know
why
that
they
stuff. And
then
it doesn't disqualify you necessarily.
Right.
They need to know it.
You know, in writing these minutes, I'm trying to be tactful, and I'm like not saying who said what, but on the second page where it's the bulleted is continued from the page before, it was Barbara who said, some members expressed concern that retaining items 8 through 13 on the printed questionnaire will deter a percentage of prospective voters from completing the form. These members, Barbara, suggests waiting until the first day of jury duty, after jurors have viewed the orientation video, to obtain answers to questions 8 through 13.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, you know what, maybe you could just write a letter to Judge Stefanis saying, you know, kind of like building on what's written here. So why don't you think about what we talked about or have you thought about what we discussed on July 10th?
Yeah, because we thought about maybe writing it.
What about
if other people agree?
Oh, or we could just say
much stronger.
Okay,
if you agree with me?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
Then we just say, and then we save him the trouble of going over and combining questions and stuff, unless he wants to do that for when they get here.
Or I could say
you can still ask him everything that's on the back side.
You know, we missed your participation on July 24th, and the discussion, the group discussed seriously our concern that the questions 8 through 13, in fact, do deter a percentage of prospective jurors from questioning. Have you thought about while you're doing this combining? Have you thought about why not we just wait until the first day of jury duty time? Would you like me to write a letter like that? To
yeah, I think
and pretty much just pretty much saying what's in those two.
Something like
and
we
I'm
would
not
like
sure
your
we got that point either about how they would. We weren't like dumping those questions in the ocean. We were saying people would fill them out when they got here.
Mm-hmm. How did he respond when you brought this up at the last meeting? Did he respond to that?
He just kept talking about how they needed to know the answers, which is why I didn't think he got the point.
Okay.
You know, I know they need the answers to that. It helps them in the courtroom, and they would have that. They just not have to distribute that to everybody in the world.
Sometimes it's a lot of crosstalk like I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
And even though we're trying to like be only recognized, but people talk over one another. And I think who knows where his mind was. But he so far he has not been openly, you know, shut out anything.
No, I didn't.
Well, I would do a better job of keeping this meeting in order. You know. If you are not called on, you will be reprimanded if you speak out of turn.
Didn't he
Mr.
say?
Mr. Gladney. And yeah, you can defer to
don't
Ms. Miller
have to be the first person to get the treatment.
I don't mean to like step on anyone's foot, but I'm noticing in your. I'm sorry, it's been a little while since I looked at our official list of members, but Randy Rosenbaum is a member of this committee?
Supposedly.
Okay, because
he hasn't come yet.
If no one minds that he's not here, that's fine. You know,
his input would be good.
But as chair, I don't know if you would be able to make, you know, send him an email or something like that. Like, you know, Mr. Rosenbaum, we miss your valuable presence at these meetings, and just, you know, want to know if you could make it to our next meeting. On such a date.
Mm-hmm. Right. Maybe, and I could send him the minutes.
I'm sure he can. I mean, well, isn't he on our email list?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he gets the minutes, right?
I think so. I'll make sure he's on there. Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He may have a regular conflict or something on Friday nights, and if we need to, we could probably adjust our schedule.
I mean, if he just showed up once, I mean, just so we could get some input from him as the, you know, from the public defender's office, that would be.
Well, and I don't know if he dropped out, because I think Julia dropped out.
Yes.
Well, she was never in.
Yes, she was.
Oh, she was.
Oh.
Yeah,
well, yeah, anyway.
Okay, so I don't know if there was some conflict there with everybody. But so then I will email Randy and just say, hey,
okay,
what's going on with that? And I also have the report that I'm supposed to bring to you.
And Jay, that goes down in the minutes as some numbers.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm not going to say anything about too. Julia. I'll have that name, some numbers.
So, okay. That was a question, that discussion came from number six, proposed new language by Judge DeFantis. Bill, do you have anything to share with us about that? About
the I could put the PowerPoint up on, send it to whoever puts it up on the web or something if you want to look at it beforehand, so then maybe we can get through it faster next time. There's about 20 slides with a bunch of maps. There's a pretty clear pattern to me that the north part of Champaign, that's high black population, has the fewest percentage-wise people receiving the summonses. And that's what the data we had was the number of summonses sent out. There were like 6,000 in 2008. I just did 2008 instead of doing all 4 or 5 years. So out of the 6,000 sent out, about 20% of those were duplicates, and I asked Roger in an email what that was. And I think it's because of deferrals. They
How
get
more
many
than were duplicate? I'm sorry.
About 20%. But I think it's because of deferrals. They put it off for a few months, and they get another summons.
Oh,
so
they're
probably in there twice. But we also don't have names. We only have addresses. So there's potential there that somebody that lives at the same address might be two different people.
Mm.
But I just eliminated all duplicates. So we might have eliminated some spouses or something, but probably not very many.
So what you really need then is you need about 30 or 45 minutes in front of an actual map to walk us through some things. Because I'm even as you're talking, I can hear things that I'm going to need you to
do. It would make a lot more sense to be looking at the pictures and the map. But there are some patterns we can look at, and you can see all the points just by looking at the points. That tells you something. You know,
you immediately saw that North End, most the heavily dense population of black people had the lowest number of actual summons.
I wouldn't say the lowest, but there was a trend there where there was a spatial pattern, basically that part of town where we all know the black population is tended to have lower summons, percent summonses. Because I use census data to calculate a percent of how many summonses were sent out versus the population that's supposed to be living there. So then you can see it with colors on the map where the low spots are and where the high spots are. And the high spots tend to show up out on the edge of town, and that's because of this growth phenomenon over the past 10 years. The county's added about 10% to the population, and it hasn't been evenly spread out. It's been mostly in certain areas, so that really warps the picture a little bit.
And before I call on you, Bob, I just have one last question for clarification. So after only 10% of the master list, or what do you call it, there was a master list, you said, that 10%, of that, when you get that 10%, everybody gets a questionnaire from that 10%.
That's what I understand. And just in rough figures, about 10% of the master list would be about 14,000. So that many people would receive questionnaires. And of those, the response rate is about half, I think. But they get about half those back, and then they send out summonses to those people.
14,000 people get an actual summons.
No, they get an actual questionnaire.
The actual questionnaire, and then you get a certain percentage back. I don't feel so bad now when I'm out flyering and I put out 1,000 and I get 3 people. So, Barbara, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, so this low percentage is the low percentage of summonses, but they're based on the people that turn back the questionnaires.
And yeah, we so we don't know whether it's because
the questionnaires were really all fairly distributed, and that's what we
exactly
have to know, too.
And what Roger was saying was that we were getting ahead of ourselves to deal with the summons. We should deal with the questionnaires. And he did send us the statute about something that we asked about. He sent it in email. I don't know.
Oh, I didn't get it.
You didn't get it?
Holland will provide the sites of the statutes to specify how
to live. He sent those statues. I didn't see those.
Did you know how I missed it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought he sent it to everybody.
Okay.
Did anybody else get them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to send then a message just to... You got them? You got the site? Okay. Then I'll send a message to you, Joan, asking just for you to forward it to me. If you've saved that message. Have you saved that message?
Yeah.
Okay.
The other thing I did was I mapped the results we got from Paula by zip code. So you can look at those too.
What's that?
That was that we got it in an Excel file by zip code. When was that? A couple months ago? Paula Hannaford.
Right.
So I mapped those, and she had it broken down by master list, summons,
questionnaire.
At each stage, questionnaire.
Oh.
At each stage. The only stage that gets kind of weird is toward the end. The people actually responding to the summons can be more than the number of summons sent out. Because sometimes the people responding are responding to summonses that were sent out in a previous period.
Oh, my goodness.
So mm-hmm. it kind of falls apart at the end. But there's like four or five steps there that are mapped that look pretty good.
That would be great.
Yeah, so we're going to need to spend the next meeting, at least maybe the next two, letting you really... Because that gives us a basis to move forward when we actually see. Because when we go back to the beginning of this, we were saying that people of color are not represented in the jury. So we need to see this stuff and we need to understand it in order for us to really feel like we're, I guess, really accomplishing our mission. Right. Yeah. Well, helping us accomplish that mission. I did send, I don't know if everybody saw the estimates that I sent around mm-hmm. for BCP.
Yeah.
You thought they were high.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what radio charges are. I mean, it's, to me, it's just like,
well, we've done some things, and when you call around to like 105.5 or any of those places, they're much higher. On campus, it was really, really high on campus to do something like that. But to do something for 6 months or a year, $1,800 for a bunch of judges, you know, I don't think that's a lot to ask. You know what I'm saying? The other one was $3,600 to run an ad for four times a day, 5 days a week, with nights and weekends thrown in for free. So if you can hear this every day on WBCP for a year, you know.
And that is our audience, right?
Right. I mean, that's the major, that's the bulk of the audience there. I mean, we could do some things on some other spots, but that would certainly, that's targeting the black community in particular. Now, 105.5 or something like that could also accomplish the same goal. I think that's going to reach a younger audience. 105.5 is a younger population of black people, young kids who listen to hip-hop and stuff like that. Cause,
that's important.
Yeah.
That's probably more mm-hmm. important. Yeah. Well, they're equally important. Now I have to show how out of the loop I am. I haven't listened to that station.
WBCP?
No, that one I have, but the one you just said, 105, that people listen
105.
To.
Which one is that?
105.
That's not the chief, is it?
No.
Oh, okay.
105.5 FM. So it's...
Is that Decatur?
I don't know where it's out of, but it's...
This might be Decatur. Mm-hmm.
You've got two of them now that are becoming more popular, especially for young people. 105.5 and 107.9.
107.9
FM.
Is that what kids are listening to these days?
Yeah, both of them.
107.9.
I know, because when I get in the car, I'm like, Johnny, what station? And then you got them programmed in. 105.5, yeah. 107.9, 96.1. The only reason BCP is live with them. So I know those are the spots where the young people are listening, and if there were some messages sent, you know, somehow, but they're going to be expensive. But maybe we can get them to partner and say, listen, you know, this isn't just about money.
Right.
Big business conglomerate over there. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Radio stations have to do a certain amount of public service. Couldn't this be a public service announcement, too?
That's true.
We spoke about public service announcement, but they are usually, you know, a drop in the bucket here and there. You know,
except if the station was with the program, if the station endorsed our mission,
that's what I'm talking about.
They put them on good slots. And then here's the other thing, the content. And this is where it comes down to you, Brother Ada.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to have a wonderful ad. It's got to have music. It's got to have, well, I don't know if it has to have music. It has to sound good. It's got to be tight. The message has to be correct. And I'm not the person who can put it together. But you guys are. You are. I'm not.
Well, we can definitely work on that. So if you can work on Judge DeFantis.
Money.
Working with Judge DeFantis. And I guess, William, you had spoke of possibly speaking with some people. I'll call 105.5 and 107.9 and see if we can get. I'll just get quotes from them first. And then we'll see if I can speak to managers or people who are in charge to see if they can come and maybe attend one of the meetings, and we can talk to them about possibly sponsoring this or being partnering with us in this, and maybe cutting a little more flexibility or slack on as far as price and or PSAs. Okay, I'll do that. So somehow we got off. So that was weird.
Old business.
We talked about the mapping. We're going to make sure that we have the projector and everything set for the next meeting, and we're going to give you an opportunity. How much time do you really think you need?
I'd say 20 minutes would probably be enough to get started. Just depends how many questions there are and stuff.
Okay. So if we set up when the presentation was about 20 minutes, and they give people time to ask questions. Okay. And under new business, I had made a note here that what if we propose that those who, you know how like if you go do your taxes, if you fall in this bracket, you get this tax rate and this tax rate. What if we said if you were proposed, we found a figure, said if you made more than $35,000 a year, you don't receive any money for jury service. And anybody underneath that, you received twice as much or three times as much, whatever. So took all the money away from everybody who is sitting in there who can afford to be there.
Wow, I like that idea. But it must be more complicated because suppose one person makes $35,000 a year and this other person does, but he's got four kids. Mm-hmm. That's totally different. You know, you can't just say you make X. You've got to, like, they do that on income tax too, don't they? How many children you have?
Yeah.
It doesn't make a difference. It was just an idea. I'm sure we could kick it around a little bit more, but certainly, you know, if I'm thinking, if the idea is that everybody we've seen come in there. Like when Carol went, she got $10 a day, and then she donates that money back to her job or employer.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't do that. I didn't know I was supposed to do that. So the little $30 or $40 I got from I put in my savings account. I got the money from my job. I didn't know, but I didn't quote unquote need it. Certainly, I would have preferred that it went to someone else who was not getting paid to be there. You know, I wouldn't mind that being the case for me, even with the two children and a dog that and whatever else that I support, right? So I just thought I thought we would put that out there and see if they could get kicked around.
Interesting. Can we kick it around? Is this time to do it? Well, this is one thing where I think Champaign County could act independently. I didn't get the site of the statutes, but I think we're not able to choose anything for other than the master list, the Secretary mm-hmm. of State's and the county clerks, registered
yeah,
voters.
That's right.
But in how we pay people, I don't think that's governed by state statutes, because I know some counties pay more than what we pay.
Mm-hmm.
So we would have to get there to be some support behind this. It would be more work, because then the jurors would, I would want people to self-declare, I make $50,000, and not have to show their IRS return. It would be on the honor system that mm-hmm. you state what your average earnings is, and not make the questionnaire again so difficult that it deters people from filling it out. And it, on that, based on an honor system, is that's too little kid kind of speak, but mm-hmm. what's the language that you use? Just self-reporting. Mm-hmm. That would be very interesting. Of course, boy, the letters to the editor and the editorial.
I think it would be hard to administer. And
it would be more work.
And maybe since employers are getting it back, it could actually function as a disincentive for employers to pay, because they won't be getting the money back if their employees make more than $35,000 a year.
And are you talking about individuals or are you talking about households? Because you could have an individual that makes $30,000, but their household can make like $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean...
Right. Well, that's true. See what happens when you throw an idea out.
Yeah, I'll beat up. In the spirit of the idea, though, mm-hmm. I'm thinking that there's two or three groups maybe that we want to especially give money to. That would be people who are self-employed. A lot of poor people are self-employed,
mm-hmm.
and they get nothing for their time, like your barber,
mm-hmm.
guy, and people who are unemployed. Now, there, you know, getting some pay, like $30 a day, would be a real incentive for them.
Mm-hmm.
And another possible category is retirees below a certain amount,
mm-hmm.
you know, who are living on Social Security under a certain amount. And that way you wouldn't have to get real complicated. Now, the other group, like the one you're in where you get compensated by your employer,
mm-hmm.
why pay them at all? That's a category. You don't have to worry about how much they make. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If you're getting compensated because you have a large employer, or any kind of employer, because the employers are supposed to pay you
mm-hmm.
by law, right?
No. No, not private. You don't have to.
Private, oh, not private. Okay.
No. No, you. William and then Ms. Newton.
Another category I thought of is people with family responsibilities, taking care of kids or older parent or something. That's
mm-hmm.
probably a reason they could get a deferral or just not serve. If there's any kind of child care or elder care kind of thing we could work out with somebody, that might be good. And then I thought earlier maybe like trying to get MTD to give a pass, a year pass or something to anybody that served. But now MTD passes have come down in price so much it might not be worth as much.
Well, this goes back to a discussion among Julia Reitz, Tom DeFonis, Carol Ammons, and myself more than a year ago. And I think that the judge is already talking with the MTD board about having free bus rides or free bus service to the courthouse.
For anybody who's going to the courthouse?
Right. For jurors ride the bus free.
Yeah.
So, and I think that has been taken care of.
I was thinking just like a year pass would be
an incentive. Oh, for a free year pass.
Yeah.
Oh.
And it's only worth like $50 now. They knocked the price down so much.
Yeah, I just got mine. I think it's wonderful. It's $60. It's wonderful. I bought it the first day they became.
But in the spirit
of
what
you share. What about your summons for a bus pass? You show your summons. Because a lot of people come that don't ever get on a jury.
No, it's already been worked out that if the juror prefers to take the bus as opposed to driving his or her car, that they don't have to pay to ride the bus. That has been done already.
Mm, good. So I guess what William was saying is something along the lines that what are other ways that you can offer some sort of compensation
yeah.
to make people feel like I'm getting more as a person who's really struggling to make it based upon economics, that they're getting a, you know, a $25 gift certificate from Schnucks or, you know, or whatever, you know, county market. This is bringing these businesses into the fold, you know, and seeing that there's something else there. It seems doable when I first think about it, think about two or three people, but when you start thinking about, you know, how many people, 6,000-7,000 people who come through
mm-hmm.
the courthouse in a year or whatever it's going to be, that's a lot to ask a particular business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to donate 7 times 20,000. I mean, they like, you know, no, I ain't gonna be able to do that. You know, mm-hmm. but if you spread it around, if you have several different businesses, I don't know. Those are some things that I guess we could kick around and think about possible ways to increase incentive. And we should give that responsibility to the Justice and Social Service Committee. I don't know. I think that we start. The reason why I said that is because a lot of the ideas we come up with. They take work to actually come up because now if you say, okay, we're going to reach out to these businesses and grocery stores to try to see if they'll do it. You got to do County Market, Schnucks, IGA, Walmart, Lowe's. You have to go to all these places and see if they'll be on board. And that may be a group setting. That may be each individual, you know, and who's going to go do that?
Well, you could go to the Chamber of Commerce and cover a lot of places that way.
Mm, okay. That's a good one. So is there any other new business?
Well, Bill had talked about follow-up interviewing of people to focus group follow-up interviews. And this is something I think that you thought that we would pay people for their time in the interviews.
Mm-hmm.
Is there interest in continuing this? Or do you think first we should look at what we see from the map analysis and proceed to that afterwards?
I haven't thought about it. Well, I think it would be good. I think it's just another potential tool we could look at if we identify since if we can actually get addresses of people that didn't show up, I think that was what I was thinking of, was send out an invitation to a focus group to these people that didn't respond to their questionnaire. And if they would respond to that, then you could get maybe 10 of them together and just sit down and have a free lunch and pay them each $30 or something and just talk with them about, you know, why didn't you fill this out or how do you feel about juries, and maybe try to get at the root reason why people aren't responding. And maybe it is child care, or maybe it's economics, or maybe it's a businessman that's just too busy or something.
See, I think that's a very worthy idea.
Can I say something? Once when I was on jury duty, afterwards I got a letter from the U of I Law School asking me if I wanted to participate in a study. And I went there on a Saturday, and I don't know how they got our names. They got the names of, and addresses of people that had been on juries, and you filled out this questionnaire about how you felt about serving on jury duty. And when you left, you got $20. And I wondered if we couldn't
You're
get...
You're still excited about that, aren't you?
Yeah, I love it. But I wondered if we couldn't get, you know, some help from the law school. I mean, these are people that care about who's on their juries.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's a good idea.
Yes, indeed. Well,
I think after we look at what you can show us, when looking at the addresses where the mail has been sent, how they correlate with the census tracts, then we can talk about the next step being to actually interview people so that we have something more than you and me conjecturing. I think people aren't showing up because they don't like the question about a family member being a victim of a violent crime. Oh, I think it's because they need to make money at the barbershop. Oh, I think it's because childcare. Rather than have the anecdotal information, we would have people to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we should do that. And yes, if I don't think we have to offer a lunch, but I think if we could offer $25 or $30 or $40.
Well, where's that money coming from?
Well,
ACLU,
right? ACLU could. I mean, that would be,
yeah.
I'm talking a small group of maybe 10, 20 people. So $600, I'm sure, for something like that, the ACLU would cough up some money.
But then we would have to have solid, and we would have to write out the results in a sophisticated, programmatic way. I mean, this would be real research.
Oh, yeah.
I would like to get a grad student to write it up.
Or at least have a working committee take a lot of time in filling out a questionnaire and the type of things you want to talk about at the focus group.
Okay.
And then... the ACLU does focus groups on a statewide basis. I could talk to them and get ideas about how to run one, and I don't think they'd probably provide us with somebody that does it. I think they might use professionals to do it and have to pay them a lot of money, but we could probably figure out a way to do it.
Okay. Well, here's something I've been thinking about a lot. School will be starting soon. Another bunch of people getting their drivers, taking driver's ed, and people in their social studies classes, and we don't have the teaching module for them. And I think if we don't have a teaching module, it's not going to be taught about what happens when you go, when you receive the summons, when you receive a questionnaire, what voir dire means, what's the peremptory challenge. And I think it's going to fall to us if we want to create a training module for social studies teachers to use in high school. But what do you think about asking, so far I think locally, a sympathetic or supportive social studies teacher is Michael Pollack.
Mm-hmm.
What would you think about if we invited him to one of our meetings? Should be before he gets too busy with school, but to find out how can we be in the schools.
I like the idea of how can we be in the schools. Mm-hmm. Training module, though, I mean...
Curriculum.
Yeah, I think that's getting outside of our domain. Now, I can't remember if we've talked about this before. Does the county, like the court systems, does it have a, like any kind of jury... not manual, but like a flyer? Or what, we could look at it. If not, we could see if one could be created. And at the very least, see if the schools will be willing to pass those out, like at the high school level, maybe not freshmen and sophomores, but to juniors and seniors, at the very least. And we could at least try to bend the ear of school boards and see if they could, would be willing to have some kind of curriculum put in there. I don't think it's up to us to write the curriculum right there, but to see if they'd be willing to interject that. I'm not sure how soft, you know, how we should soft fell that, you know, so we're not coming to, trying to come across overbearing, but yes, also come across firm in our belief that that's something that should be, you know, done in the schools. And like I said, at the very least, if they would just distribute flyers. Like I said, I'm not sure if the court system has that, but if they don't, we could see if they could create one, but then, of course, looking at the costs of how much that would be.
I'm guessing that what the courts have is that video, that orientation video that we saw.
And
I guess it works 50% of the time. Excuse me, I guess 50% of it works at least all the time. Sometimes you get at least the video, sometimes you get the audio. But
it wasn't working when I had jury duty. Hattie Ladd had to come down personally. And actually, that's really funny because, you know, they said it was broken, and so Judge Ladd came down, and she said, you know, usually I don't come down here and do this. I'm too busy or whatever. And, you know, and the judges are busy. But so she came down and did that personally. And I really liked that.
You made a better impression.
And I was sitting here thinking, like, I'm really glad I just didn't get a videotape.
Yeah.
But that was the, having the personal touch was nice. But, yeah, a video, if it's working.
That's all they've
got. You know, would be something even good to show in their classrooms. Okay. You know, would they devote, you know, just once a semester in their social studies class.
But I think the one that, that we stylized for our own uses with the narrator, I mean, Judge Ladd in her robes is appropriate, but also someone like Aaron or Ken Turner or Patrick Thompson doing some of, having their own, you know, you saying your experience in Iroquois County and how that made you feel 30 years ago. And, you know, so just something from your heart that would be, that young people of color would listen to coming from you. Because that really happened to you. But I think that the video that, that we could stylize would be much more valuable if we built on the one that the court system has produced. And I don't know how difficult it is to splice stuff in. Is it difficult? You know about
He said that it wouldn't be difficult when I talked to Judge DeFantis about it. I did send him an email saying that I was willing to come and begin to learn whatever terminology I needed to learn to actually do one of these videos. And I spoke with another teacher, creative writing teacher at Centennial. His name is Stan Yanchis. I reached out to him to see if he would be willing to... He wanted me to write up something for him or to get some feedback and give him something, a basis, a framework that he could hand his students and ask them to come up with a creative poem, spoken word, song, or whatever around jury service so we can introduce this cool factor. And Stan has very good rapport with the students. They've come out to Speak Cafe and stuff like that. So reaching out to Stan, he said he'd be willing to do that, but we really need to give him as much information as we can, time frames and dates, which is where I needed Judge DeFantis to give me some more information about when we could do this, how to do it, so then I could give Stan some sort of framework as far as deadlines and stuff like that, because he said he needs deadlines so he can make things happen. And what sort of language do we want them to use? How do we present this to them that you can flip it how you want to, but this is some of the content that has to be in there. Somehow, you know, these words have to be said at some point throughout your piece that you're using, just so that it gets the message across that we wanted to get across. So we'd have to work with that from a creative standpoint. But
Aaron, he would give his students the theme. He would say,
we'll give them the theme.
But we have to somehow inspire them. They have to know what the problem is.
Okay, so they have to have some sort of background. That's what I'm saying. What do we put together for them? So if you just say, hey, I want you to write a poem about jury service, they're like, what are you talking about? You know, so we have to have maybe do a presentation where I can go in, or Ken or whoever, Patrick, Martell, whoever. You know, we go in and say, hey, listen, this is what's going on. These are some of the concerns. This is the reality. Here's some myths. Here's the truth about some of the things that's going on. How do you all feel about it? We talk about it. And then we say, what I need you all to do is
is to write something, come up with something, brainstorm. Let's get something out today or over the course of the week that we can actually play on the radio. You'll hear it on
the So that could be the public service announcement. The public service announcement could be a young person's original poetry about that makes somebody want to respond to that questionnaire when it arrives in the mailbox.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Potentially.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay, let me write that down. I want to make sure I connect that to Stan. So I was at, all that came from when I talked to Martell about this, about some things we had been working on. He said that, you know, when you think about the local school boards taking these information to them, I thought about the driver's ed class. I was just thinking, you said, okay, driver's license, driver's ed class, share some of this information, a video or something about this, getting your license is also going to be able to allow you to do this when you're old enough. But presenting this information, not just to local school boards, but the State Board of Education. This is not just a problem for Champaign and Urbana, right? So in time, as we build this up, we can do a presentation to not just the local school boards, but the State Board of Education saying, listen, this information doesn't just need to be for juniors and seniors. Thinking short-term, sort of mid-range and long-term, if I hear this in 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade, okay, here we go again showing this video. Well, now I know you know about it because you're tired of seeing it. So now I know you have some idea of what we're talking about here. But if you hear it in 11th grade, 12th grade, you know, I heard it. I don't know if it's set in long enough, but if I'm hearing it over and over and over again, this video, different people, different angles. And like you said, it could be we dedicate 2 days, 3 days out of a semester, 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade. You're hearing this. You're taking a trip to the courthouse. You're going to this mock trial that Professor Beckett and them have set up. But you're going to know about this. When you leave high school, you won't say, I don't know anything about a peremptory challenge. I don't know anything about civil service. I don't know what that means. You will know when you leave public schools in Champaign and Urbana. You will have some idea of what this is about and the importance of it. But that's why we need the superintendents and the teachers to say, okay, I'm committed to shop, share this video, let you come in and talk, or whatever, a judge or somebody to come in. So that's what I'm thinking, short term and long term. I think the biggest bang for this committee is we're going to have long term effects. A lot of the stuff that we do right now may not have an effect over the next 6 months, year, but I think getting this stuff into the hearts and minds of the churches and the schools, the radio and stuff like that, it'll have a long term effect that will make changes.
Well, here's an idea about outreach. And this was in the Buzz, the weekly Buzz magazine that was on yesterday's newsstand. Aaron Ammons is mentioned in this little story. It's about a program that was made possible through some funds that the city of Urbana put forward, the Urbana Consolidated Services Grant. And at the Independent Media Center, there's a program called Indie Media and Arts Lab for kids aged 12 through 16. And they've been learning how to do radio and audio production, instrumentation, community gardening also, which is what Aaron does, and that's what was mentioned in the story. But here are young people.
She just finds everything. I don't even know anything about this.
They just came through this, and here are kids who they just picked up these skills. Now, I see the name of the instructor is Keist?
Could I
get in touch with Jason Keist and say, now, see, we'd have to protect the privacy of the young people, but if there were, a dozen young people in this class, these are now 12 youth who know how to produce ads.
Mm-hmm.
And so could we invite them to produce an ad for us that could be run on WEFT or on 107.9?
Yes, and if I thought about it, we could have did it. They could have did it this over the past 2 weeks.
So I'm confused. I'm confused. So, are we doing this thing with Stan Yanchus's class? And would this group be producing the ad, and then the Stan Yanchus class would be creating the verbiage for it?
Well, this is an open. This is a discussion that's out there. This program ended Thursday, so we don't know. That's not a group. We have. There is another group that we could target to actually ask them to help produce a radio ad. But Mr. Yanch's class, I spoke to Yanch particularly about creating the language and creating the jingle or something like that.
This is past tense. This is like would have been good if we'd known about it 2 months ago, because I think today was the last day of this. But it's the idea that some funds were available. Kids went through like an intensive course in learning the arts of audio and visual and radio programming. And these would be young people who they could have been, if they were so inspired, could have been producing ads about for a jury of your peer, you got to be there.
So you should get the little hook going in and say that.
Cool,
because
it almost rhymes.
Okay, so I know we stretched this out a little bit. So we have a couple of things, though, that we need to do. Schedule the next meeting. I proposed August 14th. How do people feel about this?
I won't be out of town. Okay.
Is that 3 weeks from now?
Yeah. Because we met twice this month. I thought we accomplished quite a bit. We could meet once next month in the middle, or we could do
August 14th and then 2 weeks later.
Okay, August 14th and the 28th. Does that work for people?
I foolishly sent an email around saying, I'm available any Friday night at all. Well, that's not true. Okay. On the last Friday of every night, I go and hang out.
Every month?
Thank you. the last Friday of each month, I have a freestanding obligation.
Okay.
It's a Champaign County Democrat.
Oh.
It's our social.
Right.
So I'm not going to come on the
28th. Yeah, Matt, you didn't know about that, huh? Matt
should go because he's a Champaign County Democrat. Now, we're nonpartisan, and if anybody wants to...
But it's not an obligation. I mean,
no,
you
it's
don't
not.
Want to go sometimes,
it's so much fun. It's always so much fun.
Hear ye, bring this meeting back to order. Scheduling of the next meeting. August 14th is the proposal,
yeah.
Or August 7th and 21st?
How about the 21st?
Instead of the 14th? Okay, then we'd have the benefit of you.
I'm just throwing it out there and seeing.
21st is 21st.
Okay.
21st, does that work
right.
For
first? Yeah, and it's more likely that Roger Holland
would
be
better and be ready to roll.
All right.
So we don't do the 7th.
No, we're
going
to go August 21st.
Okay.
Yeah. We may do twice a month again, but
yeah.
Next month we'll go with one. August 21st.
Okay.
Public participation. You can't come all the time and don't participate. You got something to say. No more public participation. And I'm going to adjourn this meeting at 7:17 p.m.
I might need some help making sure that the doors are closed properly since Pius wasn't here. He told me what I'm supposed to do to lock the doors. And I'm not sure I'll do it correctly. And I was hoping Patricia would be here because I think she's had that experience. But if somebody can... Okay, now to turn this off.
Do you need a ride?
Oh, I love a ride. Push record off.
Well, if you're going to, then I'm really supposed to be somewhere at 7. But I got
emails. Stop.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill.
It's so hard to get
there are many aptitudes that I lack, and manual dexterity is definitely one of them. Here's a little thing. Okay. Neil's. I know Neil primarily in print because.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
he does a lot of print.
Yeah. Oh, it looks like it's still going.
Button down.
I'm 100% guilty of making this meeting run roughshod by everybody talk, like a freestyle meeting.
Well, you have to have some of that.
Yeah.
Well, you have to be able to respond.
Maybe it's because Judge Stefanos
to think there's
Well, yeah, it was the first group we've met where it was real informal, but I liked the last meeting, too, when the judge was here because there was a lot of crosstalk for the first time. There's a lot of responding to people. It wasn't so long.
I'm going to take this. Does anybody need this copy of
me?
This extra copy of Neil's letter? I'm going to take it.
Yeah, I'm fine. Does he have one? I don't know. We don't know that.
Do you think I should send that PowerPoint to have them put it up on the web, or should I just wait and have people look at it?
We should look at it among ourselves first.
I can do that.
Good. Because it's too big to email. It's like 9 megabytes.
Yeah, I think we can wait till the 21st.
Yeah.
What do you get? Oh, boy, Barbara. We've got a lot of things going on. Bill, thank you. Yes.
Oh, yeah, we never really talked about
tasers.
Oh, yeah. What'd you find out about
tasers? Well, I found I had a 90-minute meeting with Chief Penny.
Wow.
90 minutes?
Wow.
Daryl Cruz is with me, but it's mostly me and...
That's about $400 worth of
champagne. Yeah, Chief Penny. He was in no hurry. Stop. I think we'd have been here 2 hours if Daryl hadn't had parking here. But I was surprised. I've never talked to him before, never even heard of him. And he was very articulate and intelligent, like police chiefs are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that. He surprised me very much by saying that. First, he had no timeline for introducing tasers to Champagne.
Oh.
He had no date when she was going to ask for them, but he definitely would ask for them.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't even have to go to the city council, but he, mm-hmm. which I knew, but he would go to a study session.
Mm-hmm.
But in the thing that was surprising is that he said that our area, and I think he means Champaign County. I wish I could go back and ask him what he meant. Regional law enforcement was sort of in the process of becoming a model for the state on tasers and use of force policy. And that in preparation for this, they had had a meeting with the AMA. And the AMA had done what he called research. Now, I have to find this because I did not ever find it. And doctors say that tasers do not hurt the heart. Well, I'm sorry. I think this is kind of like Philip Morris. doctors used to tell us that cigarettes did not hurt your health, too. But anyway, he's convinced that tasers have never killed anybody, which is the Taser International Blind.
Mm-hmm.
But he had some news for me, and that is that they've done research on this category called excited delirium, which is generally made fun of because it isn't a medical term.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that the doctors explained to them that in their view, it is a medical term applied to racing.
Is it still on? I'm sorry. Does it?
Yeah, I'm still on. That's too bad. Can we wipe out this last discussion?
No, the microphone's been removed.
Oh, that's so. Right.
Okay,
but
cool.
This is still be on.
No, but it's still recording, isn't it?
No, not the microphone. Let's play it back, cool. Okay, you all. If you guys want to stay, I was actually supposed to be somewhere at 7.
Okay. Someone, the thing is, I should be able to figure out how to lock the.
Don't ask me. I don't know.
Let me look at it.
It's talking about a. Go down toward Marshall. Oh, here.
Can you get it to go off?
No.
Reminds me of dreams I have where I can't get a sound to go off, and I wake up and discover that my clock radio's been playing, trying to wake me up.
Yeah, I think it's still trying to record. But I pressed